Jeremy Wren was played by Ashley Margolis, and Jack Self was played by Kyle Gardner. Our narrator was Jacob Polly, and our composer and musician, John Alder. The Blackwood was written by Jacob Polly and produced by Susan Roberts.
You're listening to Drama on 3 on BBC Radio 3, with a series of new plays recorded in front of an audience at Summerhall Arts Centre as part of the Edinburgh Festival Fringe.
After Fear, by Oliver Emmanuel.
Ishbel has always considered herself open-minded, not easily shocked.
I'm sorry, I didn't see you.
Excuse me?
You think you're better than me?
What?
Nah, bitch. You ain't better than me, acting superior and shit. I see you.
Do I know you?
Interior, a hallway. A block of newly built apartments. A city, evening. The sun is dying beautifully, bathing everything in orange light. The shadows are long, the sound of traffic not far away.
Nah, you don't know me, but I know you.
There's been some kind of mistake. You've mixed me up with someone else. Could you let me pass?
The woman is Ishbel's exact opposite. Dark, southern. A small body, but with a density, a power to it. The woman is taut like a fist.
I was wondering why my man wasn't bothering with me. I was wondering why I was all tired and lazy, why he couldn't look me in the eye. Didn't make no sense. It was you. You.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, no.
No, I don't.
Why you've got to come here? Why you've got to take what's mine? You've got enough already.
Please, don't shout at me.
Telling me what to do, bitch.
Bitch. Ishbel has always feared that word more than any other.
It's not rational. There are worse curses, but for some reason this has always struck at the core of her.
Look, I'm sorry. I have
to... Yeah, running away, innit?
What do you want from me?
I want what's mine.
Take this. It's all I have.
Stuffing money into the woman's open hand, Ishbel shoves past, pushing open the front door.
Cut to...
Exterior, the street.
Ishbel is running. She sees no one, hears nothing. She rushes forward with no sense of direction.
The glow of the last hours in the arms of her lover is gone.
Now only panic.
Now only trembling.
Now only fear.
Ishbel reaches the end of the street before she realises she's going in the wrong direction.
Shit.
Taxi!
Music. Persistence of Images by Max Richter.
Close up of her wife's lips as they press lightly on her cheek.
You're late. Am I? Sorry.
Where have you been?
Shopping.
Huh? Where are your shopping bags?
In her panic, Ishbel has forgotten to prepare a lie.
Oh, I didn't buy anything in the end. I couldn't make up my mind.
Oh. Okay. Do you want anything to eat? There's some leftover pasta.
The house is just the right side of ostentatious success. A Victorian facade with minimalist interior, large contemporary landscapes on the walls.
Originals, not prints.
A kitchen with large windows that look out onto a landscape garden with high walls.
The high walls are necessary rather than purely aesthetic.
There are occasional issues with the more conservative neighbours.
I'm starving.
Did you forget to have lunch again?
Maybe...
You have to stop doing that. Ish, it's so bad for you.
Uh-huh. Is there any of that nice wine?
You are infuriating.
Her wife, older, bright-eyed, intellectual, fastidious, the youngest QC in the country. She's recently been headhunted for a winnable Tory seat and is seriously considering it.
Your health.
To us.
Ishbel, early 30s. A natural middle-class exterior masking a bohemian sensibility. A documentary filmmaker. A few years ago, Ishbel made a series of very successful short films about children in care. She was nominated for a BAFTA.
Is there something wrong?
Nothing.
You haven't taken your coat off. Are you cold?
Oh, I wondered why it was so warm in here.
Are you sick?
I'm just hungry.
Ishbel has never put a label on her sexuality. Men, women. She's always enjoyed her freedom.
But then 5 years ago, Ishbel found herself flirting with a brilliant QC with big bright eyes whilst interviewing her on the subject of kids in the criminal justice system.
6 months later, they were married.
How are you?
Good.
Ishbel and her wife have worked hard to achieve the impression of easy success.
It has not been easy.
They are rightly proud of their achievements.
Anything exciting happened today?
I got a call from the Prime Minister.
Shut up!
It was just an informal call. A chat, were her exact words. I mean, it certainly wasn't an official interview or anything. That will happen later, if at all. Well, she's surprisingly funny. I didn't expect that.
Ishbel drives the conversation to safe, familiar territory.
She glances at the objects in the room, the things they have bought together, the foundation stones of them.
This is the world she knows. This is the world she understands.
Her heart rate slows. Her fear dissipates.
Fade to black. Next morning, the other side of the bed is empty. Her wife has gone to her chambers.
Ishbel is left alone.
Even in this half-awake, half-asleep mood, she thinks in moving images.
The throbbing vein in the neck of the woman in the hallway. Her teeth as she spits the word bitch.
Bitch.
The terror of that final image has faded somewhat.
Why the hell did I give her money?
A reaction.
A reaction to what?
Fear.
God, how embarrassing.
Very natural.
What kind of person reacts to fear by handing out cash?
You were shocked.
I didn't know she existed.
The lover never talked about a girlfriend.
Well, he's never talked about anything, actually.
There's not a lot of talking involved.
But that must end now.
Ishbel's nature resists complexity.
Ishbel gets out her mobile and writes a definitive text.
It's over.
She sends it before she has time to reconsider.
It's over.
Music. Fragment by Max Richter.
Flashback, 2 months earlier.
A party at an art gallery.
Ishbel doesn't know anyone. Ishbel doesn't remember why she's been invited. Ishbel is the only one listening to the pianist.
It's really beautiful.
Thanks.
Did you write it?
I wish.
So sad.
Too sad. I'm getting dirty looks from the gallery owner.
Bugger him, I like it.
He smiles at her profanity. He has a sad smile, like the sad music he plays.
What's so great about sad music? Why are we drawn to songs about heartbreak and misery? It's perverse. Wouldn't it be better if we listened to upbeat anthems of joy?
Isn't the world mostly sad?
God, I hope not.
I don't think I could live in a world of only happy music. I'd take to drink.
Speaking of which, my glass is empty. Can I get you anything?
Montage. Ishbel drinks in the bar with the pianist.
Her laughing mouth, his careless eyes.
She puts her drink down and lets her hand rest on his. A moment of connection.
Cut to. Music mixes with the sound of sexual intercourse. Silhouettes against a darkening window frame. A cry of ecstasy fade.
The present.
Interior. Bedroom. Morning.
It's over.
What was she thinking in starting the affair in the first place?
An affair? Is that what it is?
What other word would you use?
I don't know. There isn't a word for it. A series of encounters. A bad habit. Didn't add up to anything.
Whatever. It was so unnecessary.
Ishbel loves her life. Ishbel loves her wife.
Really? Yes. Yes, our life together is important. It has meaning.
But Ishbel is impulsive, greedy.
The image of the woman in the hallway flashes in her mind again.
What can she really do? She doesn't know me.
Her phone buzzes with a reply from her lover.
Meet me. No. Meet me. Now, please.
Ishbel stares at the words for a full minute before making up her mind.
If it's over, what harm can it do?
On the walk to the cafe to meet the pianist, Ishbel tries to calm herself by thinking of the Austrian writer Stefan Zweig and his wife Lotte.
The subjects of her next film.
Stefan was one of the most successful novelists of the 1920s.
And 30s.
Lotte was his secretary, 30 years his junior.
The love of his life.
Fleeing the Nazis and the destruction of the world they adored, Stefan and Lotte lived in England, then the United States, and finally Brazil.
In 1942, shortly after Lotte finished typing up Stefan's memoir, in the sight of the Sugarloaf Mountain, the pair committed suicide.
Ishbel wishes to make a documentary feature about the Zweigs and fear.
Its nature and power.
How fear drives us in bizarre directions, even to our own destruction.
She has in mind a radical, unconventional film that mixes reality and fantasy.
The opening shot. The newly arrived couple are dropped by taxi at the doorstep of their Brazilian villa, nervously glancing over their shoulders and stepping forward through the door. The shadows shiver, then follow them through the door. fear is manifest and constant.
It will be beautiful and sad.
Ishbel's masterpiece.
By the time Ishbel arrives at the cafe, she has almost completely forgotten her own fear.
You can't end it. I won't let you.
You can't stop me.
I love you, Ishbel.
Don't be absurd. I refuse to let you bully me.
I'm not bullying you. I'm begging you. Please. This is real. You and me. We mean something.
Ishbel isn't sure.
There's something too quick and rehearsed about the pianist's words.
She's heard them before.
They're lines in a Hollywood film.
She notices a couple at the next table. The Zweigs.
Him. Older, delicate, stylish.
Her. Beautiful, but dressed as if she had something to hide.
Zweigs drink espresso and share an ironic smile.
I don't know. I don't like being threatened in hallways.
Who threatened you?
Oh, didn't she tell you? I made a total fool of myself. I gave her money.
What are you talking about?
Your girlfriend.
My girlfriend?
Oh, God, she's not your wife, is she? You utter bastard!
Despite his easy practice words, the look on her lover's face is not put on.
He is genuinely mystified.
Ishbel, there's no one else but you. I swear it.
2 hours later.
Exterior. The street outside the pianist's apartment. Again.
Shit! Why did I do that?
Somehow Ishbel found herself unable to resist her lover's urgent pleas and returned to his bed.
It's the last time, definitely.
You said that before.
I can't explain it. There's no explanation. I'm an idiot.
Perhaps you enjoy the feeling of fear.
Fear is an aphrodisiac, after all.
But this is the last time.
Yes.
If it's the last time, there's no real danger in it. Not like anyone saw you or...
Ishbel.
That voice.
Ishbel.
You know my name. How do you know my name?
I know more than that. I know your phone number, your email address, your wife's email address.
What do you want
Take
from me?
Take a guess.
I haven't seen him again. It's over.
Bitch, you think I'm blind? I've been watching.
That was the last time.
Nah.
I'm telling the truth.
You wouldn't know the truth if it was sitting on your face.
Ishbel's mouth is dry. Her bowels are heavy.
Look, I could apologise, but I don't see the point. We're adults. These things happen.
You took something of mine. Now I want something of yours.
What?
You know.
Money. I don't have anything on me. I can come back. Just
I've
give
got
me...
pictures. Nasty pictures. Stuff that won't go down well with your wife and a mate. I can destroy you, Ishbel. Get me what you owe me or I'll mess up your entire life.
Stefan Zweig stands in the doorway of a shop a little way off. He has a notebook and pencil. He appears to be taking notes.
I really don't have much on me.
The woman takes Ishbel's purse from her and removes what cash there is.
She smiles at Ishbel as she drops the purse on the ground.
Not bad for starters.
What's the matter? I've been mugged.
Ishbel had thought long and hard about what she would tell her wife.
Whether she'd tell her anything.
Oh, God. Sweetheart, are you all right?
I'm fine.
Sit down. You hurt.
Only my pride.
When did it happen?
About an hour ago. I was on the other side of the city. I would have been here sooner, but I handed over all my money, so I had to walk.
You should have called me.
What if Ishbel told her the truth?
It would feel so good.
A release from fear.
Have you been to the police?
No.
You should go to the police.
What would be the point? It was hardly anything.
But it's impossible.
She'd be devastated.
Personally. Professionally.
A high-status gay lawyer's wife having an affair with a man.
It would be a complete negation of everything they'd worked so hard to achieve.
Ishbel has to swallow her confession and hold her fear by herself.
And you're sure she didn't hurt you?
How did you know it was a woman?
Oh, well, didn't you see it was a woman? I thought you did.
There's something in her wife's bright eyes.
What is it?
A glimmer of something.
There for a moment, then gone.
She throws her arms around Ishbel and pulls her closer.
Forget it. It's over. You're home. Oh, there's nothing to be frightened of.
Was nicht. Du machst.
Sie blüft.
Du musst was tun.
The next morning, Zweigs are sitting on the end of Ishbel's bed, screaming at her in unison.
In English? Do
what are you
nothing.
Going to do?
She's
you must do
Wait.
Something.
One at a time.
What are you going to do? You must do something.
Do nothing. She's bluffing. Wait.
Thank you, Stefan. Thank you, Lotta. That's incredibly helpful.
Ishbel's head drops. Her stomach curdles.
Ishbel, think logically. The affair is over. This woman, whoever she is, you don't need to fear her empty threats.
No?
If she truly wanted a man back, she would have exposed you immediately. She wants money, that's all.
I don't have any money. Everything belongs to my wife.
The important thing is not to panic.
I must lovingly disagree. You must not talk, Ishbel. You should pack your bags and run.
Seriously?
Go now or face disaster.
Go where?
Brazil.
I can't go to Brazil!
I left Austria with nothing, not even my books. You will survive. The human spirit can live on very little.
Ishbel glances around the room, desperate. She is very close to the precipice. In her mind's eye, Ishbel can see the domed peak of the Sugarloaf Mountain.
Ishbel does not leave the house.
Ishbel does not speak to another human being.
Ishbel does not check her email or answer her phone.
For 3 days.
Her eyes are red with sleeplessness. Her breath is stale.
When her wife returns from work each evening and asks how she has spent her day, Ishbel replies,
I've been doing research.
The creative response.
And it's true.
Ishbel has been looking up flights to Rio de Janeiro, packing and unpacking her bags.
She has no idea what to do.
Normal life and energy have gone.
Interior, day. Ishbel stands at her window looking out, fearing the future. A long, unsteady shot.
Cut to...
Ishbel. Alone. Straight to camera.
I'm dreaming. Exterior. A dark street in the favela of Rio de Janeiro. I'm being chased. She's after me. I can't see her, only her breath on the back of my neck. I'm running. Ducking down alleyways, up steps, along the dirt roads and slum houses. I think I've lost her, but then I turn the corner and she's there, laughing and spitting at me. I turn, I run. I feel her hands on me. She is clawing at my skin. I've done nothing wrong. Leave me alone. Then all at once, I'm at the edge of a black hole. A landslide. Houses, entire streets collapsed into the abyss. Endless, and she's pushing me, tipping me over the edge. I scream. I try to get away, but then I hear my wife's voice. My wife. She says...
Oh, Ishbel, what is it?
Night, a sliver of moonlight through the curtains, her wife on the end of their bed.
Ishbel?
She's covered in sweat.
What's happened?
You screamed. I was working in the living room there. Are you all right?
I don't remember.
Stefan Zweig smokes a cigarette out of the window, while Lotta pours herself a very large whiskey.
You've been so different lately.
Have I?
Well, you know you have.
I don't think so.
Distracted, like you're somewhere else in your mind. Is there something you haven't told me?
The moonlight catches a wife's features.
Pain, confusion.
It would feel so good to confess, such a release.
Lotta nods. Stefan gives her a stern look.
You know how much I love you. You can tell me anything. Trust me. Ishbel.
It's fine. Absolutely fine. I had a bad dream, that's all. Please don't worry about me. Go back to your work.
The next morning, Ishbel checks her mobile for the first time in a week. 15 messages from the pianist, a text from her mother, and...
I want more.
Anything interesting?
Oh, just my executive producer wanting a meeting about the finance for the Zweig film.
I can't.
How's it going?
No choice.
Slowly, some big people are interested, but it's hard to get them to commit.
I don't have any money.
When are you hoping to shoot?
Ask your wife.
Next year, fingers crossed.
I can get you something, but this has to be the last time. It can't go on.
Believe in yourself. It's a great idea. I'm sure you'll get everything you need.
Find it or else, bitch.
Exterior.
Somewhere.
Ishbel walks, but she has no idea where she's going and doesn't care.
More text messages.
The pianist.
Please, Ishbel. I want you. I need you. What's wrong? Why are you ignoring me? Please, Ishbel. I've got something for you.
A picture.
Dick.
Ishbel stops in front of a bookshop.
Stefan Zweig is signing copies of his posthumously published autobiography as Lotta flicks through a tourist guide to South America.
What have I done? How did I get here? I had everything I ever wanted, but now... I'm lost. I'm so lost.
Ishbel continues on into the unknown.
Fear is worse than punishment.
How so?
Later that day, interior. Kitchen.
Her wife is making dinner.
Fear. It's far worse.
Ishbel isn't sure how the subject has come up, but all at once she finds that they are talking about what has been obsessing her for the last fortnight.
Take my latest case.
Which one is this?
The murder. Told you about it. Business deal gone horribly wrong.
I remember.
The defendant was guilty. Evidence was clear cut.
What did he plead?
Not guilty.
Why?
Oh, who knows? It was clearly torture for him.
Explain.
The pressure to maintain a lie. Oh, it's terrible. The truth was burning inside him, desperate to get out. I could see it on his face. If he could only find the words, he'd end the suffering. He'd be free of it. But he kept up the pretense until the end.
Did you get him to confess?
Naturally.
How?
Made him an offer he couldn't refuse. I showed him that there was a way out of his fear, that he could be free of it. In return, I'd acknowledge the strength it took to speak out. There's tremendous bravery in showing the worst, the most vulnerable part of oneself, isn't there?
Can Ishbel be as brave as the murderer?
For a second she believes it is possible.
But it's only a moment.
Then it's gone.
Perhaps it wasn't fear.
What's that?
I said perhaps it wasn't fear that kept him silent. Perhaps it was shame. He felt ashamed of what he'd done. He didn't need to be punished by you because he was already punishing himself. Sometimes shame is worse than fear.
You know, I hadn't even thought of it like that. Hadn't even occurred to me.
How long did he get?
Life.
They sit and eat their dinner in silence.
Fade to black.
A banging at the front door.
Sweet place you got here.
What are you doing?
Wife at home?
No, I don't know when she'll be back.
Let's make it quick then, eh?
Ishbel's arm sags. The front door swings open and the woman steps inside. What is it about this person that completely disarms her?
Apologies for barging in. Thing is, I need cash. Like now.
I don't have any.
Check out the fancy paintings. Are they real? I reckon they must be worth a bit.
Why are you doing this? It's disgusting. You are a terrible person.
What does that make you? All I'm asking is a little compensation for the pain you caused. Let's say 10 grand. The day after tomorrow? Sweet.
£10,000 the day after tomorrow. £10,000 the day after tomorrow. £10,000 the day after tomorrow. Ishbel presses the bell of her lover's apartment.
You have to make her stop.
What?
I can't handle it. I don't have the money. There's no way I can get it. Just make her stop.
The pianist looks at her with sad eyes.
Well, I'm sorry. I'd invite you in, but I have a student right now.
I don't want to come in. I want you to...
A door opens at the end of the corridor and...
Hey, beautiful. You said you were going to play some more.
It's not her.
Who's that?
Hey, look. I messaged you 1,000 times. I'm an artist. I have needs.
Go to hell, you selfish prick!
£10,000.
The day after tomorrow.
£10,000.
The day after tomorrow.
There's no way out, Ishbel.
I know, Lotte.
It's too late.
I know, Stefan.
What are you going to do? Strangely, Ishbel feels completely calm.
For the first time, Ishbel fully understands Stefan and Lotte.
Fear can drive you to the end of the world.
Can I get these, please?
Interior, a pharmacy.
Have you used these before?
Yes.
Remember, there are side effects. Make sure you read the leaflet.
This is the 5th pharmacy that Ishbel has visited in the last 2 hours.
She glances over her shoulder as she hands over the cash.
She has the sense that she's being followed.
The Zweigs are there.
Following every step.
But is there someone else too?
The pharmacist hands Ishbel her change.
Thank you.
She has everything she needs now.
Now only
trembling.
Now only fear. Ishbel is impulsive, greedy.
Bitch, why do you keep talking when everything you say is a lie? I can destroy you.
Fear is worse than punishment.
The day after tomorrow.
This is it. The end.
Exterior. The street.
Ishbel!
Her shadow. Her wife.
Ishbel! Are you following me?
Fear erupts inside her, but she sees that there are tears in her wife's eyes.
Ishbel! I don't. I don't know what you mean.
It's okay. Give them to me. Give me the pills, please.
Close up, her wife's face.
A single tear tracking down her left cheek.
I know everything. I always did from the first time you met him. One of my clerks saw you leave the art gallery together. I had to make you see what a mistake it was. A woman's just an actress out of drama school, the daughter of a judge. I know. She has a drug problem, needed the cash. I never thought she'd go as far as she did. I am so sorry about that. What did you expect me to do? Couldn't let you go? We have worked so hard to get here. We are on the edge of something truly great. Got another call from Westminster. They want to meet me for a formal interview next week. Don't you see? I have to do something. And yes, there was a wee part of me that wanted you to suffer. As I have suffered. But it's over now. It's all over. Oh, there's nothing to fear. Why are you laughing? It's so funny. Ishbel. Where are you going? Didn't you hear what I said? There's nothing to fear.
I know!
Are you? Why aren't you answering your phone? Stop this. I need you to come home right now. Do you hear me? It's incredibly important. Please, darling, I love you. I never meant to scare you.
Exterior, evening, a mountain path, Rio de Janeiro. Stefan and Lotte Zweig are walking hand in hand as they approach the villa that will be their final home. Stefan stops to catch his breath.
Do you want to sit for a moment?
I just need to catch my breath.
Lotte holds his hand close to her chest and smiles, her voice over.
Is this the end of fear? Is it? I can't tell. We have travelled so far across oceans. I don't know how much further we can go.
A snake slides across the jungle floor towards Lotte.
Oh.
Stefan flicks the snake back into the bracken with his walking stick.
It would be just our luck to have come all this way only to be eaten by a rattlesnake.
He bows to his young wife, holds out his hand.
My love.
Darling.
Lotte takes his hand and they proceed up the hill. For this moment, they could be any two people in the world. They have no past, they have no future. But right now, tonight they have one another, and the light is golden.
Shall we go on?
Music, title card, after fear.
And cut. Thank you everyone for that one. Let's get set up for the next shot.
In After Fear, Ishbel was played by Shauna MacDonald. Her wife, by Meg Fraser. The woman, Mariam Hamidi. And the pianist, Robin Ling. After Fear was written by Oliver Emmanuel and was a BBC Scotland production directed by Kirsty Williams.
Of a Lifetime by Lulu Wonchka. Two girls are in a hostel in Seville.
Girls? Probably women.
Well, young women.
Like, early 20s.
It's hot.
Oh, too hot.
The hottest they've ever been in their entire lives.
They've been out in it all day.
And one of them,
Kayla,
takes her top off.
Bra and everything, right in front of Georgia.
The other girl, who doesn't even notice.
Kayla suddenly realises what she's done, and she's shocked.
She says,
I've never done that before.
Georgia says, what? Because she genuinely has no idea what's happened, and isn't really listening because she's lifting her skirt up in front of the fan.
Nothing.
Kayla replies.
But what's really shocked her is that she has never so casually undressed in front of someone her whole life.
And in that moment,
she feels pretty emotional.
Because these two girls have been friends for a long time.
But not so much recently.
And that casualness...
For Kayla.
That casualness means that there was trust between them.
A kind of closeness.
That though it wasn't registered consciously...
Was in the muscle memory.
Or... It was 40 degree heat, making two girls from Scotland lose all their inhibitions.
But Kayla chose to see it as a sign that this trip they'd taken together...
After years of not being friends...
It was worth it.
So let's go back a little.
Or all the way?
Yeah, okay. Back to when they were friends as kids.
You see, they'd been friends that long.
As kids, they were on the same road.
They went to the same schools.
Had the same friends.
Not the same hobbies, though.
Georgia liked sports.
Kayla liked to daydream.
Not a hobby.
Which might not be a hobby, but it did take up a lot of time.
I mean, Georgia did daydream as well, but more realistic stuff. You know, toys she wanted. Then later, who she liked and how they were going to kiss her.
Kayla also imagined that stuff. You know, how the boys she liked were going to confess their undying love for her. You know, that kind of stuff.
And at this point, they still went to the same parties.
Bunked the same lessons.
While sitting in the same toilets.
But as they got older, one big thing changed. Kayla was going to university.
But Georgia wasn't.
And the first time Kayla came back, she wasn't having a great time away.
And so she spent her time at home, telling all her old friends stories about her crappy housemates.
So this one girl has never used a microwave before. Never. In her whole life. And this other girl has actual horses that she owns.
And Georgia enjoyed this as affirmation of her life choices.
But as Kayla stayed there, she started to engage, develop new interests, and started to find friends that actually shared those interests.
And Georgia changed too, of course. She worked and made friends, and she was excited by the feeling of control she had over her life. By having a job.
Of course, this excitement would drain later in life.
But for now, she had responsibilities. And she had a paycheck. And it was exciting.
And so they just found that they had less and less in common.
And so they hung out less and less.
They still did birthday messages.
And the occasional, how are you?
But they knew very little about the ins and outs of each other's lives. And it was embarrassing.
For Georgia not to know that Kayla had been seeing someone.
Or for Kayla not to know that Georgia had been promoted.
But then Kayla's mum died.
Yeah.
Or at first she was ill. And at that,